Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to help get you ready for March Madness, we've got a three-pack myself alongside from Covers. We've got Jason Logan. You can follow him on Twitter at CoversJLo, as well as Ro Hit Panea. You can follow him at Covers_Ro. Jason, great to have you on the show.
It's good to see you again, Rob. Like I said, we haven't talked in a long, long time, but glad to be back. And this is a great time of year to get down some wagers and enjoy the madness.
And always love jamming with you. And Rohit, welcome back, my friend.
Always good to be on. I'm getting ready for some March Madness.
So here's what we're going to do. We want to help you the best way that we can, and that starts with process and mindset. Hey, how are we thinking about betting March Madness? Because we have a month of betting on games, and it is going to be absolutely fantastic, but we want to make sure that you're an informed bettor. So we're going to let you know what is our mindset and process for how we are selecting games and bets. We're also going to talk about some of the teams that we like from a Cinderella standpoint. And then we'll also, at the end, get in a larger picture saying, all right, as we zoom out towards the Final Four and attempting to win your brackets, how are we thinking about things? So, Jason, I'm going to start this with you. When you think about betting March Madness, what does your process look like?
Yeah, it's a little different this year because I've always kind of had at least a toe in the college basketball waters throughout, you know, football season and during the football playoffs and stuff. But this year I was so hyper focused on NFL that I didn't get to watch a whole lot of college basketball. So over the last month, it's been very much a crash course. And now that we're into the tournament, I'm really having to do a lot of studying up on a lot of these mid-major teams and even some of the major conference teams that I didn't have an opportunity to watch. So really it was, you know, taking in as much as I could over the last month, sitting down, trying to watch as many games and read as many recaps and takes as I could. But then really digging into current form and what makes these teams tick. And that's the spot that I'm in right now is looking at these particular matchups and finding what drives these teams. How do they match up? Because the tournament is, you know, renowned for these great mismatches and tempo and size and approach. And then, you know, finding which team can kind of impose its will on the other. Which requires, you know, you go in and you find, like I said, you find out how these teams tick, and then you match them up, and then you have to go back and kind of maybe look at past opponents and recent opponents that kind of fit the same blueprint as their opponent as well too. And how did they adapt, and how did that change the game playing, you know, a small team playing against a bigger team, a slow paced team playing against a faster team? You know, how did this team slow down a transition attack? How did they counter big men on this team? So those sort of things are all the things that I'm weighing right now as I kind of break down the bracket, but also make some picks and predictions here, which we're going to have for every single game on Covers.
So, Jason, what I love about what you said is I believe your sports betting mindset and process is so important now, because you are like a lot of people who, when you transition from NFL to college basketball, we're like, all right, here we are now. And you're not exactly starting from zero because you understand value. You're starting to look to say, what are the ways that I can make myself an informed bettor? And I know on my end, when looking at the Formula Four, why I'll be looking for an underdog, and I want to be on underdogs. One, from an entertainment standpoint, because who doesn't love being an underdog in March Madness? And two, from a value standpoint, I think this year we're seeing, like many years, three-point shooting. Hey, the recipe for knocking down a big team is you can shoot a lot of threes. We're also looking at two-point efficiency. You can look at tempo, whether a team's really fast or a team's really slow. Rohit, talk to us a little bit more about your process.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of the same things that go into it. And I think the big thing anytime you're kind of getting into these into the big tournament is that there are massive differences in competition from, you know, a team that's playing in, you know, a tiny conference most of the year going up against a guy from the Big Ten. And a lot of times you wonder how these really good small school teams are going to compete against maybe the not so good teams that are coming out of the powerhouse conferences. But I always think that there's a few factors that you can look at that kind of translates well over, you know, between conferences, things that stay consistent, things like height and length, you know, ability to rebound the ball, ball handling, turnovers, and a big one, especially in closer games, free throw shooting. And, you know, if a team hits their free throws, that's going to happen, you know, that's going to happen in conference play. That's going to happen in out of conference play. That's going to happen in the tournament. You know, those are the things that really translate well kind of across the border. You know, looking specifically at characteristics I look for in teams that are going to advance, especially those lower seeded, lower ranked teams, higher seeded teams that are going to advance. You mentioned a big one, 3-point shooting. If a team can catch fire from deep, that always makes them dangerous in the opening round. But I find that that beyond the opening round doesn't really hold true. You need to, you know, stay consistently hot from deep. It's hard to do that, you know, back-to-back games, three games in a row. What I think really works in that is defensive play. Defense is always a big calling card. You know that you're a Loyola guy. And, you know, when Loyola, you know, slower pace, defense, that's the key to pulling off a couple upsets in a row. Maybe, you know, going from being, you know, a double-digit seed to all of a sudden sneaking into the Sweet 16. And I think defense is just so important in this tournament because, you know, anyone who follows college basketball knows that we've got these home-away splits. They are so, so different in college ball because shooting is just so inconsistent from game to game and from home and away. And all of a sudden, you've got these teams competing on neutral sites, different sight lines. You've got you know, them playing in environments that are completely different than what they're used to. And shooting and offense can be a bit inconsistent, but defense tends to travel well, and teams that defend well tend to always have a little bit of a tighter control over the game when you get into March.
So, Rohit, you mentioned free throw shooting. One team that has my eye, Akron, fourth in the nation in free throws, are taking on UCLA, who can be a shiny object. We see what they did last year. We see the potential of what they could do. Right now, that number is around 14. I'm just keeping my eye on it because they shoot a lot of threes. They do play a slow tempo, which can be good or bad because you can also get run out of a building, but they do make free throws. And, Rohit, you said something that there's something on my mind I can't get out, and it's around Auburn. And you mentioned about how home versus away. Auburn, fantastic at home. At times, they look like the best team in the nation. But on the road, not so much. And they seem like a team that could win the national title. But at the same time, they don't always show up because of their guard play, because they've got some stars, but they have inconsistent guard play. And there's just something in the back of my mind that says, I want to like Auburn, but at the same time, I'm on alert that could they be the two that could get upset? And you're like, how in the world does this happen? Because the recipe that we've seen from them this year is they're not consistent away from home.
Yeah, no, I think that's a big one. And I think their inconsistency away from home and their guard play are exactly two reasons why I would, you know, probably look to fade them at some point relatively early in the tournament. Maybe not necessarily in the first round, but yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, who they have on the perimeter there, like KD Johnson went 0-14 against Texas A&M in the conference semis. Wendell Green Jr., he shoots about 36% from the field on the season. So a lot of inconsistency from that guard play. And that's, you know, that's really tough when you get into the tournament where you need to hold on to the ball. You need to consistently make your shots. And as good as guys like Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler are inside, that can make things really tough when you're going up against other teams that can handle the ball really well and can pressure your ball handlers.
All right, so let's transition this over to the Cinderella side of this. So, Jason, are there any teams that stand out to you, whether it's a bet you've placed already or somebody who has your eye that isn't one of the major teams that you think could pull an upset, or someone we're going to want to keep our eye on from an underdog getting points?
Sure. Well, I'm locked into the West region here, so I've kind of had tunnel vision on that. And Vermont has jumped out to me as one of these teams that could definitely come out and shake things up here. They take on Arkansas in the opening round of the tournament. But Vermont's been a fantastic team for a long time and has played some big teams too. They've played teams like Maryland. They've played teams like Purdue. And so they're not going to be intimidated. And this is also a program that back in 2019, they took Florida State to scare the crap out of the Seminoles in the first round. So this program is not intimidated by the big stage. They're not intimidated by a power conference rival as well. And I just really like the way that Vermont's been going about their business here. If you look at their ATS record, it's been phenomenal. They've been blowing out teams. They have the third highest margin per victory in the country, just behind, you know, teams like Gonzaga. And Arkansas is a team too that wants to get out and wants to run. And when they're forced to play in that half court set, they struggle. And Vermont is one of these pace teams that can get out there. They can definitely slow down teams in transition, force Arkansas into a half court set. And then Vermont is also one of these defenses that doesn't allow for ball movement. They jump the passing lanes and they plug up cutters. And so what you're going to find is Arkansas not getting to push the ball down the floor, having trouble moving the ball around and finding seams within the defense. And then, you know, wound up late in the shot clock and forcing a lot of bad shots as well too. So, you know, the Catamounts, one of these teams that's just fantastic at controlling tempo. And it's one of these mismatches that you put out there where it's Arkansas very, very dependent on getting up and down the floor and scoring in transition. And when that doesn't happen, then, you know, who has the advantage?
So, Jason, my heart goes to Vermont for several reasons. My first interview ever, when I ran a sports blog called AsTimeExpires.com, and we loved college basketball, was Taylor Coppenrath from Vermont. And anybody who remembers Taylor Coppenrath and that Vermont team, that was the same team with TJ Sorrentine, who shot from the parking lot. And I believe they made it to the Sweet 16. They made a run. For me, I'm already locked in on Vermont +5. Some things to add. One, they're very good at shooting their three. They're super efficient at twos, 58%, which is third in the nation. And then lastly, top scoring defense in the America East. So when we say, what are we looking for a recipe for upset? Three-point shooting, efficient shooting, and great on defense.
And they were very, very good on three-point shooting, too, in the conference tournament as well, too. They put up almost 10 three-pointers per game, shot better than 43% from beyond the arc. And, you know, if they start knocking those down, you know, you put some space between you and Arkansas, and that's it's definitely going to change the way that the Hogs have to do it. They're not a fantastic three-point shooting team either, so tough to catch up.
So, Rohit, you've got the Midwest that you're covering. What's on your mind there? Any Cinderellas or any teams that you're looking at?
You know, there's one, but as weird as it sounds, you know, it's 13 seed taking on a 4 seed, but odds makers are only making the 13 seed a 2-point underdog, which tells you that it's really not that big of an upset. But if you're following any time a 13 knocks off a 4, it can look big on paper. That, of course, is the South Dakota State Jackrabbits taking on Providence Friars. You know, this is a really interesting one because, like we talked about, three-point shooting is so important. South Dakota State's the best three-point shooting team in the country. I mean, they hit three-pointers at 44.2%. So that's more than 40 points higher than second-place Colgate. You know, that's a big deal. They're fantastic on offense. They also do really well in post-ups. They shoot well. They shoot well from mid-range. You know, they do all these things well. And, you know, that's a big reason why they're only 2-point underdogs in this one. Providence is certainly not the greatest number 4 seed out there. They're coming off a pretty ugly loss. You know, they lost by 27 points to Creighton. Creighton's not the greatest offensive team. They let Creighton score more than 80 points, shoot more than 50% from the field. So, you know, they haven't been playing that great lately. Coming to this one, not looking super, super sharp. And I think the Jackrabbits might really put a scare in them after winning 21 games in a row.
I like where your mind is, Rohit. I'm already on the Jackrabbits +2. And one thing I want to recall from when we had Bill Krakenberger on the podcast, I asked him around key numbers in college basketball, and I never forgot this. 2, 3, 5, and 7. So, Jason, when we look at that Vermont line, +5. Rohit, when we look at this line right here with South Dakota State, +2. I'm on both of those. And then one other thing, which I've also used in NFL betting that I'm moving over to college basketball, and I know many others do, is playing the money line of the underdogs when you're also on them, because there's an opportunity. Hey, if we like one of these teams to cover, there's also an opportunity for them to win outright. So what I'll likely do is 1 unit on the spread, half a unit on the money line. Do either of you two bet that sort of mindset?
Well, I have the Vermont money line as well too. So, when it's right, I'll jump into it. I mean, I like New Mexico State against UConn in that first round. They're a +7 underdog. Am I hesitant to go and take the money line in that one? I am, because those teams are just so similar. It's going to be just a physical matchup between the two of them. So I think when the mood hits right and you think you definitely have great value with an underdog, then to go ahead with it.
What about you, Rohit?
Yeah, it's kind of the same way. And, you know, it does matter so much on what number you're getting overall in the spread. You know, if you think a game is already supposed to be close and you like the underdog, then, you know, there's definitely value in thinking they're going to win on the money line. But yeah, if you're going to see a bigger number there, you know, that Texas A&M UConn game is a really great game to kind of consider that, because, you know, there is so much similarities in terms of those two teams. They're both very big. They both rebound the ball really well. They play defense well. But at the same time, in a lot of ways, it looks like New Mexico State is almost just like a slightly worse version of UConn across the board. So, you know, there's built similarly. So I think it's going to be a closer score than odds makers seem to think. But are they going to be good enough to win? I don't necessarily think so.
All right, so let's look at some bigger picture stuff. And the number one seed that looks like they are the weakest is Baylor, the defending champs. Coming into this, they've got some injuries. They're not deep. And Rohit, you mentioned that you don't like Baylor or Purdue coming out of the East. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, that's a big one. And I think, you know, the number one seed right now, defending national champions. But I think, you know, there's a lot of things that they don't do well that really concern me going into this one. I think, you know, the big one, of course, you mentioned some injuries. Jonathan Chamua-Chachua going out for a, you know, season-ending knee injury last month. That's a big one for sure. He's so important to them defensively, so important to them in terms of size and energy. So, you know, losing him, that's you know, a big, big loss. They also just turn the ball over way too much near the bottom of the country in turnovers. You know, Akinjo's been, you know, he's a good point guard now. He passes the ball well, but he also turned the ball over a ton. I don't like that, especially, you know, when they're going up against, they might end up facing off against, you know, teams like UCLA, Kentucky, who have better ball handling, take care of the ball better, especially UCLA. They're among the best teams in the country at not turning the ball over. Then the other thing, of course, we also touched on is free throw shooting. That's another area where Baylor really struggles in. So, you know, I hate that. I hate the fact that they turn the ball over. I hate that they can't hit their free throws. And I really don't like the fact that they lost probably their best defensive player towards the end of the season. Purdue's another one that, you know, they've been really up and down. I hate over-evaluating a team based on how well they performed earlier in the season. I mean, there was a time when they were the number one team in the country, and I think a lot of people might still kind of have that in their back of their minds. But if you look at their recent play, it's been a bit uneven, and I think the biggest hole they have is that they're not great defensively. Anytime March Madness comes around, that's one thing. I think you have to be at least a good defensive team, you know, usually, you know, top 20 in a lot of metrics, KenPom, for example, to really crack into that Final Four spot. And I don't think Purdue is good enough defensively to get there. So, yeah, I think the value looking at that region is probably on Kentucky or UCLA. Kentucky, of course, you know, every now and then they can get shut down. We saw that against the Vols, but on paper, very, very talented team. You know, they're good in kind of every area of the floor. And then you've got UCLA, which, you know, we saw make a really good run last year, and they're loaded with depth, loaded with seniors and, you know, juniors and upperclassmen. And they do a lot of little things well. So I think if you're looking for value in that region, I'm definitely avoiding Baylor.
Jason, right now, over 50% of brackets are taking Gonzaga to win it all. And traditionally, that is not the recipe for success, because the number one overall seed traditionally does not win. So what is your mindset on value around picking the winner? This doesn't have to be just the brackets, but it's a, are you a pro Gonzaga versus the field, or how do you play that?
Yeah, I mean, and the Zogs come into this kind of backing into the postseason a bit. They lost that finale against the Gales. They didn't look overly dominant in the two games in the West Coast tournament that they had to play as well, too. They didn't cover in either, I believe. But, I mean, the Gonzaga is one of those teams that enforces its will. It's big, but it can get up and down the floor. It can shoot from inside very, very efficiently. It shoots the three-pointer just fine, too. It hits its free throw. So it checks a lot of the boxes there. For me, when I start trying to size up some potential sleepers, you know, I really look, push come to shove, I look at pro ready talent. I look at, you know, who's the best player on the floor. And especially when you like measure up teams like Kentucky, you know, they year over year, they always have guys showing up in the NBA. And when those final seconds come, you want the ball in the hands of the guys who were the best players on the floor. So I really look at those teams with a lot of top talents rather than an overall great team, because those guys can shine and take over games.
Rohit, looking over at the South, and for me, it is the bracket where when I look at 1 through 4, I'm most impressed. Arizona, Villanova, Tennessee, Illinois. I think for me, I'm more inclined on the top three, Arizona, Villanova, Tennessee, to say one of those three is who's going to come out there. You like Tennessee. Why?
You know, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. The big one is defense. I mentioned it earlier, and I think, you know, teams that can absolutely lock down defensively have such a great advantage when you're heading into such a grueling tournament, playing multiple games in a row and, you know, going up against some top offenses. We saw them shut down Kentucky twice in the last month. And, you know, I think they also have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I think they're entering this with the right mindset after cruising to a conference tournament win. But, you know, I look at this team. I like the players they have in their backcourt. They have some good ball handlers, good perimeter play, but they also do a great job of frustrating those bigger teams. And as much as I like Arizona, you know, that's kind of the calling card of Arizona, is that length, that, you know, that size they have, which is fantastic. But we've seen Tennessee and how it operates against size like Kentucky. We saw how much they frustrated Oscar Tshiebwe. And, you know, they're just such a good team in a lot of those little areas. And I think there's a lot of value in them as a 3 seed in this region. I'm certainly not overlooking Arizona, but you always have to be a little bit wary. Yeah, they had a fantastic regular season. But, you know, you're always a little bit wary about those teams in coming out of the Pac-12. I feel like the SEC was a little bit more of a bloodbath. We saw the same thing in the Big 12. We saw the same thing in the Big 10. And so I think it's sometimes easy to overlook some of those teams that might have suffered some losses in their conference. But, you know, Tennessee across the board, I think, was very impressive throughout conference play. And I think that defense is going to really propel them throughout the tournament.
So let's give some final thoughts. And for me, one team that I'm looking at from a Cinderella standpoint is Virginia Tech, one of the hottest teams in the nation right now, having won 13 of 15, winning the ACC. They're third in the nation in hitting almost 39% of their threes, and also low in terms of turning the ball over. So for me, looking at them, and Rohit, they eventually, if they were to beat Texas, could match up against Purdue, a team that we're saying, all right, how do we formulate how Purdue will not move on? Man, I think there's an opportunity for Virginia Tech. So they're one team that I certainly have my eye on. Jason, what about you? Any final thoughts or any teams you want to leave us with?
Yeah, I think the Iowa Hawkeyes are definitely one of those teams that played their best basketball towards the second half of the schedule, especially on defense, really, really tighten the bolts. And then they were head and shoulders above everyone else in the Big Ten tournament, played fantastic. They were great against Purdue, absolutely. They out-hustled them. They outplayed them. You know, it got tight towards the end, but they pulled it off. That's a team that can hurt you inside and out. They shoot the three ball well. They can play tempo. They can play slower. So they're very, very versatile. You know, I think they can make some noise. I'm not high on many Big Ten teams, but that I would say they're the least Big Ten team coming out of that conference, if you know what I mean. So I think the Iowa Hawkeyes are one of those teams that could continue that strong play and momentum. And they can win multiple different ways. They can outshoot you, or they can grind it out on defense as well now.
Rohit, what about you?
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, we've touched on a few of them. I think one, if they get through the first four, that to definitely keep an eye on is Indiana. You know, I think, you know, they play really tough defensive ball. They're very versatile. They're able to kind of switch everyone there. They're going to have the best player on the floor, kind of, you know, going back to what Jason said about, you know, just the importance of having NBA ready talent. And they have one of the best players in the country. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big one for them, too, if they get through the first four. And I think they will. I think they've got a decent matchup on their hands in the opening round. And yeah, I mean, it's always a popular choice, those 5-12 upsets. They're going up against St. Mary's. Obviously, the Gales beat Gonzaga towards the end of the regular season. But I mean, they certainly have flaws. Indiana is just so tough defensively. You know, Trace Jackson Davis is just so good. And they seem to be peaking at the right time after also almost making the Big Ten conference finals. So I think all those things could make them the sort of team that enters with a lot of momentum. They could maybe even be, you know, the UCLA of this year. And I could see them, you know, move past St. Mary's. I could see them, you know, maybe making a fight out of it against UCLA in the next round. And then, you know, from there, it's all downhill from there.
It's interesting you say that. I think similarly, UCLA, while as attractive as I am to them and looking to say, hey, where can I have Baylor go down? To me, they're a very shiny object because of what we saw last year, that there's the ability for us as bettors or bracket people to be overconfident in last year's narrative, being like, oh, let's just pencil them in. And anytime I feel that sort of momentum around a team, I usually check myself to say, well, what is everybody overlooking that 1 week from now we're like, oh my God, how did we not see there was a vulnerability here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that holds true for a lot of things. I think that holds true for Loyola too, looking at them, across in the South region, going up against Ohio State. I mean, that's set a pick 'em right now. And I think that's kind of the same thing. I think a lot of, bettors and fans remember, Loyola from making that run. But at the same time, Ohio State's a pretty good team. And, they can make this ugly. They certainly have a pretty good chance there. And I think, the casual bettor or even a lot of fans might be overvaluing Loyola a little bit there.
Well, yeah. Super excited
as well too. They backed into that Big Ten tournament. They had some injuries. Definitely a team that struggled on offense with those guys out. So I mean that durability. If they do advance past that game, their durability and their mental toughness is going to be something that comes into question. I'm not high on the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I think that's the big thing for me going into that game is there are quite a few guys that are questionable, quite a few key players for the Buckeyes. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. But I think, in general, I definitely feel like there's definitely teams that are being overvalued a little bit from last season.
It's the best time of the year. So everybody, we are going to enjoy this. Thank you both of you for coming on the show. Jason, where can everybody connect with you?
You can obviously come to covers.com. We've got everything for the West region. And you can follow me on Twitter at CoverJLo.
Rohit, what about you?
You can follow me at Twitter at covers_row, covers_RO. And yeah, I'll be putting up all my picks for the NCAA tournament at covers.com. I've got my bracket kind of up there already. It's very much a preliminary bracket, but these are the ones I'm going with for now. I'm feeling pretty confident, as I usually am, before things go a little bit squirrely there. So you can check that out if you want before you make your bracket. But definitely check us out for all your predictions heading down to the Final Four.
And I want to hear from you. There's so many ways for you to engage with us. What are your Cinderella teams? What is the action you've laid down already? You can hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at Rob Cressy. And also make sure to tag at Covers. And remember, if you want to be sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The funkadelic devil hits you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rope. If you like the way the sound pump it in your black trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.